Hello, and welcome to Off the Cuff. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and on this program, every week, we are going to bring you a fascinating guest, where we are going to discuss the economy, energy, or the environment, informally and without a script. This week's guest is well known for his close analysis of the silver market and precious metals market in general. Somewhat less famously, he also happens to hold the distinction of being the very first podcast guest interviewed by this site by myself. Today, I want to welcome back Ted Butler after a too long absence. Welcome, Ted.
Hey, Chris. Good to be back with you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I cannot wait to get started. Silver, gold, where shall we get started? Let's start with the big news, gold. The Bundesbank, Germany, saying they want to repatriate a lot of their gold. Half, I guess. So they want to bring it home. What do you see there?
It's excited the imagination of the gold community as a whole, and I guess it could be an important event. People have used the word watershed and shockwave, things like that. Maybe I don't know. I'm just trying to mechanically analyze it. It's basically a transfer of existing metal from one location to the next. It's a transport issue that shouldn't have in and of itself any kind of price impact. There's no buying or selling going on. It's just a transport issue. I think the underlying fear or feeling on many people's part is that the gold may not be all there, and that may be revealed in the in this transfer if and when it takes place. That I think it could be true. There could be serious shortfalls in central bank gold holdings due to leasing and primarily that many allege. I'm not quite so sure of it though, because the facts don't suggest that leasing of gold is that prevalent right now. It was, maybe 10 years or so ago, but leasing is kind of unwound in the interim, and I question whether, all the gold that's supposedly missing from the central bank is actually missing. Look, it may be, but I don't have any particular way of documenting or verifying that, so I'm a little skeptical. I think by and large is there. The example I would use is that nobody's lying in the United States government or any other government that I know when they claim to have large stockpiles of silver. They don't have any. Whether they're lying about gold, I don't know how you would know that for sure. Maybe this transfer process would reveal it, but based on the timetable, I don't think it's going to be revealed anytime soon.
How you would know for sure, you can't. I'll tell you what, though. You know the kind of guy I am. I trust what people do more than they say. I love actions. And so here's something. So listen, so this is pretty big news, at least judging by the number of column inches written about this across the news sphere and the blogosphere and all that. But Germany's announced this thing that they're going to basically take $36 billion of bullion out of New York and Paris, and they're going to bring that home by 2020. So I'm thinking, listen, in this day and age, how long would it take you to ship 50 tons worth of cars from Beijing? Probably an afternoon, to get them on the ship. This idea that 670 metric tons of gold is going to take another 7 years, like, why? I don't understand. Like, it's like, They make it sound like, we have to do this carefully. It's 674 tons of gold. I understand there are obviously some security issues in moving gold, but it seems, I don't understand, like there's something here that I don't quite understand, because it's not a lot of money and it's not a lot of gold, and it could be accomplished by next week if they chose to, but instead we get this whole, well, we want to bring half home and it's going to take 7 years. It's weird.
I hear where you're coming from. That is a rational response, but I think when you look at why they're moving it, or the reason I think that they're moving it, there was political pressure, there was movement within Germany to, for whatever reason, to have the gold repatriated. Mm-hmm. And when you stop and think about it, it makes sense that it be repatriated. It's kind of a good idea. This whole storage of gold in foreign holdings—it took place at its formation right after World War II, when there was security concerns to keep it at home, say in Germany, which was devastated by the war. Now it makes no sense not to bring it back. So I can understand the political agitation within the country, within Germany, to bring it back, because it is a good idea. And I don't know, maybe I'm keeping it too simplistic, but I think that the government of Germany, the Bundesbank, is basically accommodating the will of the people or of the squeaky wheels in bringing back the gold. And I think that's good. I think the government should respond to the electorate. Mm. And especially if it's something that they can do that, as you say, is not that difficult. Why they would take so long, it may be because this sounds like an about-face for them. It wasn't too long ago that they were saying, nah, we don't want to move it at all. They were making up reasons why it was good to leave it in New York or elsewhere for whatever reason, and those weren't good reasons. It makes sense to bring the gold back. I think the government, the Bundesbank, is doing it because they're being forced to do it. And that's nothing wrong with that. I think they should bring it back. Now, if we have a problem and they can't transfer it because it's not there, then that's a big deal. But I don't know if we should jump to that conclusion from the get-go.
I totally agree. If we were of a mind to think there might be issues, they have 7 years to figure out how to unwind the leases or whatever might have caused the actual supply issues. But really, the real reasons that Germany held its gold offshore for so long, one, they feared being so close to the Iron Curtain, they didn't want the Soviet Union to just march in and take it at one point after the ending of the gold standard in 71. I understand that. But, they were holding a bunch in France, and that was really to help them balance at the Bundesbank level their foreign exchange reserves. But now that they're in a common euro currency, there's actually no reason. That's not a good reason to hold gold in France anymore. So we'll see. There's something interesting here. I'm of the mind to just sort of, I'm just going to watch and wait and see what happens, if anything, out of this. I'm not expecting much, to be honest. I think it will be repatriated on schedule without much difficulty, is my anticipation. So that's what I got here.
I can't. They may up the timetable. They may up the amounts if they get enough of a backlash, whatever. But I guess you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Gold can be a very emotional item, as you know.
Yeah.
And people can misinterpret certain events that it may not turn out that way. I don't know. I don't see it as, at this point, and I'm allowed to be wrong, as earth-shaking news at this point. But again, I reserve the right to be wrong.
All right. Well, we're just going to have to keep our eyes on that one. Now, I'm most excited to talk about silver at this point in time, because I know you've got your eye firmly on that particular ball. So where do we start on this? My own personal observations are, after spending some time working with the guys who have access to the millisecond trading data, noting that not just silver, not just gold, but many commodities, equities, options, now all seem to be under the thumb of these computer trading algorithms, and they've got strategies that are all their own. I think these strategies are in many cases solely focused around pricing arbitrage opportunities, which have nothing to do with the fundamentals. I want to talk fundamentals with you. Where silver is and where it's being priced, let's talk fundamentals for a minute.
Sure. I have been reporting to subscribers, it's been going on for approaching 2 years now, that there are signs emanating from the wholesale silver market that show an increasingly tight supply, almost to the point where it would be the basically a preface to actual, all-out shortage. The prime indicator that I've been looking at that seems to be going kind of unnoticed by most people is that we've had a tremendous increase over the last almost 2 years in the movement, the turnover in COMEX silver warehouse inventories. The amount, by turnover I mean the amount of physical silver that's been coming into the six or seven approved warehouses at the COMEX and taken out from, where it's something that, having watched the behavior of COMEX inventories, silver inventories for, you know, for almost 30 years, up until about 2 years ago, we didn't have this big turnover. It's like almost a daily event where tremendous amounts of silver are coming in. I'm talking about stuff that's being unloaded from trucks and put into the warehouses, taken from the warehouses, put into trucks on a daily basis. We've picked up. There's been this tremendous amount of movement, both coming in and leaving. Warehouse total inventories have been creeping up. We just hit a new high again today for the last 10 or 15 years. Not an all-time high, but the highest for the last 10 or 15 years in total levels. But that's not as important to me as the actual turnover or movement of the metal going into and out of the warehouses. We're not seeing it basically in any other commodity, or COMEX commodity, or any commodity, whether it's gold or copper or platinum. It's mostly confined to silver. And in observing this unique and unprecedented daily almost turnover, you try and figure out, why is it taking place? And the most plausible explanation I can come up with, and I'll leave it as an open invitation to anybody else who has a more plausible or an additional plausible explanation to explain why this is taking place, I think it's an indication of tightness, almost to the point of a hand-to-mouth supply situation. The silver is not sitting still. It's coming in and going out because there are multiple demands for the silver, and the majority of the silver that's there, there's over 150 million ounces of silver that's sitting in the COMEX inventories right now. Most of that silver is unavailable. It's owned by people. It's stored there, and therefore it's not available to new purchases or for shipment out. So new stuff has to continually be brought in to the COMEX in order to satisfy the demands of metal moving out. And I see it in other things. I see it in behavior in the ETF deposits, the big SLV and others. But it's mostly on the COMEX. It's this movement, and it suggests tightness. Now, if I'm correct, and it does, it is reflecting tightness as a hand-to-mouth tightness as I see it, then, you know, you can't get a more bullish factor. The question is not whether this turnover is taking place. It's taking place. Okay, that's easy enough to document. The question is, why is it taking place? Is my explanation correct? Once we have to wait for the fullness of time, but if it is correct and it does reflect a tightness, then we could be on the verge of a pronounced and prolonged silver shortage. And that's the most important thing to me, I think, that's going on right now.
Well, fascinating. So I know that in COMEX, there's a couple of categories of silver that they would have in their inventory or in their warehouse, one being registered, the other being eligible. Can you explain those terms and also where this movement is coming from, which category?
It's coming from everywhere. It's coming in and out of eligible and registered. In fact, the way I've always considered it, there's not much difference between eligible and registered. It used to be, you know, a piece of paper, a warrant attached to one form, the registered form, and not the eligible. But I think that people would do themselves a favor, in my opinion, not to obsess about the differences between the category, eligible or registered. I just look at the total, look at the daily movement, and, I mean, that's what's suggestive of the tightness. The categories change from time to time, but, you know, it's hard to get a real definition of what is eligible and what is registered. I've seen definitions given that are different than one another, and I don't think they encompass the real definition anyway. I don't think it's worth looking at, for what it's worth.
Okay, so we have a lot of churn. There also happen to be relatively high inventory levels at this point in time by historical standards. Relative to this churn, then, this 115 million ounces, is that what you said?
150.
Oh, that is high.
And change today, right?
All right, so how many days of churn is that?
Well, I don't know if I'd look at it that way, but I will say this: the average churn, a daily rate, is at least 500,000 ounces a day, and it's been approaching almost 1,000,000 ounces a day in the last couple of weeks. Today we had an excess of like 1,000,007 put in and some number taken out, 300,000 taken out. That's been a typical day recently. But in terms of what makes it so big is in terms of daily mine production, for instance, on a 7-day week, the world collectively takes out of the ground not much more than 2 million ounces a day on a 7-day week. To have, you know, 4-5 million turnover in a month, in a week rather, which has been close to what's happened the last week or two, it's an extraordinary amount when measured against world production, which I think you were leading to. It's a disproportionate amount, and you scratch your head and you say, well, why are we having this churn, as you call it? If it's not hand to mouth, you know, what the heck is it? But yes, it is big in terms of world production and just probably just any other measure you can think of.
Well, some of that churn, I think I saw in the news recently. It was a small article, but it caught my attention, which was I think a Brinks truck ran off the road in upstate New York and spilled its silver.
I did see that. That could be related to it, but I haven't seen that many truck crashes recently with silver spilled on the road to think it represents the majority of the turnover, but you never know.
Well, I squinted at the pictures, and they looked like Comex bars. This wasn't coins. They were big old bars, and they were all over the place, so I thought that might have caught your attention.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. It's funny, as a coincidence today, I sent a note out to subscribers that you touch on an interesting topic, and that's namely the form, silver in the form of 1,000-ounce bars, which is, you know, the standard industry grade. This is what industrial users and smelters and refiners deal in. This is the form of silver 1,000-ounce bars that is held in the world ETFs. It's also the form of silver that we denominate COMEX contracts, the five 1,000-ounce bars in a standard contract. So the point of today's piece was basically how I think that this 1,000-ounce bars that were scattered on the mountainside there in upstate New York that you're referencing, it may be an indicator of that's the form of silver that's going to determine the price. We've had in the past, I'm sure you remember, prior to Y2K, we had a big run-up in the premium on bags of junk coins because of the fear of Y2K. They jumped double to what they normally would be. We've had occasions in the last couple of years of seeing the mint not being able, U.S. mint not being able to keep up with Silver Eagle demand and had to allocate or not sell until they built up an inventory. It's happened a couple of times. But those things didn't affect the price of silver overall. Okay, it affected the premiums on Silver Eagles or the premiums on junk coins. But if and when we do have this shortage of 1,000-ounce silver bars that we're talking about, that's going to be a shortage like no other shortage, because that is the price of silver. And the important takeaway here, the critical factor, is that if we have a shortage in 1,000-ounce bars in silver, we have a shortage, and it'll affect everything in silver. Whereas, you know, you have a shortage of Silver Eagles or a shortage of junk coins, it doesn't necessarily affect the price of silver. But you have a shortage of 1,000-ounce bars, and that is a shortage of silver. It affects everything, and that's what this turnover that I refer to on the COMEX is denominated in. These are all 1,000-ounce bars.
Well, interesting. Even that full giant 150 million ounce inventory build, if I multiply that by 30, what do I get? $4.5 billion. Is that the complete?
Yeah. Oh, well, I have to go one. The COMEX inventories are but a subset.
Yeah.
Of the total world inventory. Let's call the total world inventory 1 billion ounces in 1,000-ounce bars, okay? That's all I look at is 1,000-ounce bars. There's 1 billion ounces of that out there. 825 million of it is tied up in the public ETFs, SLV, PSLV, the the ZKB, and include COMEX stocks of 150 million ounces. So adding everything up that we can see in the world and visible and recorded in 1,000-ounce bars, you come up to 825. I'm saying that there's probably a billion ounces in total of silver. Maybe I have to update that a bit. Maybe it may be as much as 1.2 billion. I'm not off it by some major amount of factor, but there may be a little bit more than the billion. I like to speak in round numbers. But this billion ounces, which is the entire world supply of silver in 1,000-ounce bar form, okay, is only worth about $30 billion, whatever the current price of silver is, $31 billion on any particular day. So all the silver in the world that matters is only worth about a little over $30 billion. Take that and compare that to how much gold we have in the world, which if you add all the gold, not just gold in industry grade form, but all gold, you know, we're well into the trillions, as many as $9 trillion in total world gold inventory, whereas the real silver inventory of 1,000-ounce bars, the stuff that industry and the ETFs need, is only $30 billion, and it hurts my head to try and do what percent of $9 trillion is $30 billion, and it's a very, very small number.
It's tiny. It's tiny. If ever there's a movement by, I thought this was actually landscape changing news for gold in particular, was that some of the Japanese pension funds, noting that their new incoming Prime Minister Abe has said that he's determined to drive the yen down, were thinking of ways that to increase inflation. Of course, they're mostly invested in Japanese government bonds. So what do you do? And they said, well, maybe we're going to start diversifying into gold. Well, they have just hundreds of billions of dollars stored, and if they took even a percent of that and put it into the precious metals investment market, it would be a very, very large changing event. So the point being, with $31 billion of investment grade, easily movable, warehouse grade silver on hand, there's really not a lot of room for investors to step into this, at least at the institutional and certainly at the government level, as the Japanese pensioners would be.
No question. That's probably, in a nutshell, the reason why I expect silver to not only be a great investment going forward, appreciate in price, but appreciate not just in absolute terms, but increase in relative terms to gold, because there's so much smaller amount of it in existence. When you denominate it in dollars, it's like, you can make the case that, compared to the Japanese pension system, compared to other world pools of institutional money, that gold is a very small asset when you measure it against those potential big pools of investment money. But if you do that same thing with silver, and you blow your mind. You can't believe the numbers that you put down when you see how much silver there is, how much may be available, and compare that against this giant pool of money, which seems to always increase. It shatters you. It's like you can't kind of believe the numbers when you work with them. It's good to do it on pencil and paper with a little calculator, because the amount of silver out there is so small in terms of dollars and cents, and the amount of money out there is so large by those same terms, that there's going to be a collision, that the price of silver could triple and wouldn't change that percentage that much. It's all right, go from $30 billion up to $100 billion, big deal. You're still talking about close to $9 trillion of gold, so it still remains a very small percentage. And again, I'm not knocking gold, it's a relative basis why I look at silver. If there was no such thing as silver, I probably would be, exclusively involved in gold. But because these mismatches in market capitalization, it's a no-brainer for me.
Well, on that market cap basis, I just ran the percentages here because I had to know. And there's 0.33% as much silver as gold if you took that $31 billion and compared that to $9 trillion. So
yeah, it's amazing number.
So go ahead and triple it, and you're up to a 1% capital sort of a basis difference.
They're almost, the comparisons are almost unbelievable. But anyway, I mean, they're comparisons that people can make. Now, in the fullness of disclosure, what I'm saying is I'm comparing silver in the form of, just the silver in the form of 1,000-ounce bars compared mm-hmm. to all the gold in the world. And that may not sound to some people like a fair comparison,
right.
Okay? But I contend that because silver is an industrial commodity where gold is mostly not, okay, really the only form that matters is what's going to matter to the industrial users when they run out, and it's going to be 1,000-ounce bars. So I think that, and that's also the form in which metal is bought in the big silver ETFs, and COMEX. So it's, I think it's kind of a fair comparison to just look at 1,000-ounce bars of silver versus all the gold, because we have this industrial component in silver that we really don't have in gold. And we, as you know, too, I stayed away from it. It's like in this conversation, but we also happen to have a sticky question of a very concentrated short position in silver that mm-hmm. is superimposed on this whole discussion that we're having now. And that's like put, you know, a hydrogen bomb on top of an atomic bomb on top of something else. and we haven't even touched on that. We're just talking about the movement of physical silver and how much there might be out there and how much might be available in the future. But the short position throws, you know, something even more exciting into the whole mix.
Oh, I got to be honest with you. I do track those things, and I'm watching and I'm waiting patiently. I'm very vexed by how broken our market seemed to be in lots of dimensions, silver short being but one of many examples I could draw upon. You know, to twist this story to the fundamental side slightly, what really got me excited was all these big energy reports came out recently, the International Energy Agency, the U.S. Energy Agency, BP, all of them, they're all saying the same thing, which is that by 2030, we're going to have this extraordinary alternative fuels thing. And you dig a little deeper and they're talking solar, and you dig a little deeper, they're really talking solar photovoltaics with conventional polycrystallite silicon wafers. And you dig into that and you find out you need 0.1 grams of silver currently for every watt of produced power out of solar panels. And when I just back calculate all of that, the solar industry is going to consume somewhere around 50% of all the silver that comes out of the ground in short order. If that's going to happen, I don't think it can, because I just don't think there's enough to support that, to be honest.
I find this feeling, it's a great example that you're using. You find this in a number of ways when you look at silver. Like, it doesn't compute. What doesn't compute, Chris, if you want to get cut to the chase, okay, is the price.
Right.
The price is the thing that has to be adjusted in order for any of this to make half sense and to change. You can't have a situation where a new technology is going to take, you know, 50% of all the silver produced by itself at current prices. The thing that has to change is in order to change the equation, what you're painting on as a train wreck, the price has to change.
Absolutely, and that's... that's the piece
that's
been
getting. That's the easiest thing to change, too.
Well, price discovery is so broken in our current world, yeah. and in lots of ways, lots of markets, and it's been really vexing. I see a similar mispricing right now in the price of corn and wheat, for example, against global stocks. But it's amazing. So we live in these broken markets. So that's what I love about the analysis you provide. Is like, look, there's some certain fundamental things we can stay away from them for a while, but not forever. And in your estimation, how close are we to seeing this eventual, you call it a train wreck, but I'll call it a Rose Day parade, when the shorts positions finally have to reconcile reality?
You got to take off your analyst hat and put on your profit hat. So I try and stay away from that, but I think we're in the process now. I mean, I if you go back to this rapid movement, the turnover, churn that you called it in COMEX silver inventories, I think that is an indicator that it's happening right now. Now, maybe it gets to a critical point, and then you can't help but everybody notices. No, at that point, it's reflected in the price. It's not quite reflected in the price just yet, but I think the process has begun. And once it takes hold, it's kind of like it's like a wildfire. It's like it's hard to contain. You know, I don't want to sound 2 going to happen tomorrow. It could, but I don't want to say that. Superimposed against this, you got this giant paper position where it still behooves the big shorts to smack it down one more time, because you can you can knock out a lot of paper contracts in terms of ounces and paper contracts, you know, many tens of millions perhaps, if they can do it. So we're on I think we're in the process right now. We're trying to resolve this, and certainly it has to be resolved to the upside in time. Does it have to be resolved to the upside right now and without any further corrections to the downside? Maybe. But could we have those corrections before the big one to the upside? Yeah, we could. That's my answer.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of time for this off the cuff. Ted, thank you so much. Great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Great, Chris. I appreciate it, too. It's good to be back with you.